afternoon and welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. I'm Karen Curtis and I'm here again today as we are each Sunday at noon with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates PA, a law firm practicing community association law throughout Florida. As our listeners know, we are here each week to answer all of your calls and emails about the issues that make life in your condominium or HOA absolutely crazy from 1 minute to the next. As always, we would love to get the phone lines going early, answering all of your questions. So give us a call right here in our studio at 877-850-8585. Again, that's 877-850-8585. Or if you prefer to email us your questions, you can do so by visiting the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and by clicking on the Email the Show tab.
And of course, even if you don't want to send us an email, you should still visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com. where you can listen to all of our past shows, sign up for our free seminars. You can see who the show's sponsors are and visit all of their websites. You can see what legislation we're demanding from our elected officials and which elected officials are in your corner and which are not. And you can automatically link to our Facebook page and join in on discussions about the show or start your own discussion board and get feedback from everybody else.
And by the way, if you have a product or service that would be beneficial to our listeners and want to be a guest on the show, attend our monthly seminars where you meet hundreds of different associations, be listed on the show's website, and have a commercial spot during each week's show, you can become a sponsor of the show. Just visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and send us a quick email.
And of course, if you'd like to call our law firm directly and pick our brains off the air, you can call Glazer & Associates. Again, that's at 954-983-1112. And you can visit the law firm's website at condo-laws.com. Again, that's condo-laws.com. And finally, really, thank you to so many of you for supporting camp2012.net. And for throwing your support behind our six legislative proposals. To find out more about how you can get involved and demand long overdue changes to both the condo and HOA statutes that our callers routinely complain about, again, visit www.camp2012.net. And as I keep saying, I can tell you that our proposed changes are starting to get a lot of attention in the legislature, so everybody keep your fingers crossed.
And they just make sense. Well, last show was our 2-year anniversary show.
Yay.
Wow, and this went so fast. We had a special guest, Raphael Aquino from Affinity Management Services, who stole the show when a female caller called in just to compliment Raphael on his sexy voice.
Yeah, you know, I struggled with this, you know, Karen. Normally,
you thought it was for you.
I thought it was for me. It made me look terrible.
She wanted to know if he was single.
Yeah, that was great, huh? Made me look wonderful. But, you know, I struggled with this because normally the following week I thank our guests for appearing on our show. But this time I got to tell you, I wasn't sure if I wanted to thank Raphael for showing me up on the air like that. But because, you know, I'm so mature and we're not cavemen here competing for the attention of the opposite sex, I will thank Raphael for being here and for really putting on an intelligent show last week and for making our sponsor, Affinity Management, look so great. And I got to tell you, if he ever wants to come back on the show, all he has to do is ask, and I'll tell him without hesitation. He has no chance whatsoever.
No!
Never again. Don't even bother asking.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't here all last week, but Ricardo Montalbán over here was trying to talk to everybody with a Latin accent all week, and I guess that that has something to do with it, huh?
Yeah, you didn't miss anything, Scott. Just let it go. But on that note, I will tell you that it was a very, very busy week, and before we proceed, just a couple of thank yous are in order. And the first one goes out to the Continental Group for giving me the honor this week of being a guest panelist at One Bal Harbor on Wednesday night, where we discussed all of the new condo and HOA laws that became effective July 1st. Again, thank you, Continental. I definitely had a great time. And the next set of thank yous go out to Bent Tree Villas in Boynton Beach and San Matera Condominium in Lake Park Gardens for each inviting us to teach our Condo Craze Board Certification course at their respective condominiums on Thursday. It was really great meeting everyone at the condo. Again, thank you very much. And, you know, as our listeners know, we keep talking on the show about how despite the fact that the banks have filed tens of thousands of affidavits in our court that are fraudulent in nature, there's not even a discussion about any criminal prosecutions of any bank officials who are responsible for this massive fraud. And here's what I think we need to be following and focusing on. You know, like when an influential person gets caught up in like in a massive Ponzi scheme down here, every politician who received like a campaign donation, they freak out, they get nervous, they scramble, and they do whatever they can to make sure that they immediately return the money to that person or that person's staff.
You mean like how all the guys you voted for gave back all that Rothstein money?
Yeah, exactly right. Just like that. I want to keep track. Here's what I want to do. I definitely want to keep track of every member of Florida House or Florida Senate who accepts a campaign contribution on behalf of a bank or the banking lobby. We keep hearing how tough the banking lobby is. You know, it's only a strong banking lobby if you actually have your hand out and take donations from the banking lobby, because at this point, at least to me, it's worse than accepting a campaign contribution from any single crooked person. I got to tell you, the bottom line, there's no entity or person that has committed more fraud on the courts of this state who has economically harmed the people of this state more than the banks have. And this would really be accepting campaign contributions from the bad guys at this point. So I say this, let's keep track of which politicians accept money from banks without returning it. And I have to tell you, there's simply no possible way it can be justified. And let's see who takes the money, and let's see who's the ones that say, we just can't fight it. The banking lobby's too strong.
Right.
Well, let's see if you got your hand out.
Yeah,
exactly.
I know in a lot of the other states, like Nevada, where they were really been hit by the foreclosure process, they're talking about criminally prosecuting some of the people that committed fraud or, you know, just any type of obstruction on the courts that have really, you know, set us back in addition to all the
as well they should.
Fallout.
Absolutely. Let Nevada lead the way. I have no problem with that. You know, and as we know, Nevada has its own problems with all the HOA fraud, but Nevada's attorney general is on record this week as saying that criminal charges are likely coming to the banking industry soon. So, you know, now tell me how any Florida politician would be justified in accepting campaign contributions from the banking industry. Again, when the banking industry is actually the poster child for fraud in our court system. But, you know, that's something we're going to stay on top of here, I promise. And we'll let you know which legislators put the bank's interest in ahead of the Florida citizens. And, of course, we'll let you know which politicians won't support our Camp 2012 proposal to increase the bank's liability from 1% to 2% of the mortgage when they get back a unit. You know, wouldn't it be interesting if the ones who accept these campaign contributions from the banks are the ones who won't support our proposal?
Yeah, that would be just a coincidence, right? Mm. I mean, we could necessarily read anything into that.
Yeah, right, exactly, you know.
Yeah, well, I'm with you, Eric. Instead of letting the banks contribute to the campaign coffers of our elected officials and the wannabes that are going to run for office, you know, the banks should, you know, they should be before Congress and the Florida House and Senate, and maybe they should have to answer some questions under oath about what the heck's gone on here the last 5 years.
No two ways about it. And my guess would be that you would see the Fifth Amendment invoked lots and lots of times. And how about on that note, we take Tim's call from Fort Lauderdale. How are you, Tim?
I'm good.
How can
the reason I'm calling, I was just curious about they want to assess us about $700,000. And I was just curious, is there any way we could fight that? Do they need everybody to agree to it? Or can they just, the board just pass it and that's it? And I have another.
Yeah, go right ahead.
One more fast question. And say you want to get rid of somebody on the board. How many votes do you need? 10%, somebody told me?
Okay.
Oh, no.
A lot of questions there. all right. First question, can the board pass a $700,000 special assessment, basically both in a condo and in an HOA, if the special assessment is necessary and if it's passed properly with proper notice, generally 14 days in advance, and it's spelled out to the unit owners specifically what the special assessment is for and how much it's going to cost everybody, you know, specifically per month, per year, you know, whatever the payment schedule may be. Yes, boards have wide latitude, wide discretion to pass a special assessment. It's not based upon the vote of the community. It's based upon a vote of the board of directors. Next, how do you get rid of people on the board? The board itself cannot get rid of fellow board members. They can only remove them as officers. Generally, if a person does not fall behind on the payment of their assessments, then the only way to actually remove that person from the board is through a recall. Now, you mentioned 10%. 10% would only be to have a recall meeting, and at that recall meeting, you'd still have to get a majority of the community to vote in favor of the recall. So generally speaking, the way you remove a director is by doing it through recall and getting 50% plus one of the community to vote in favor of removing that person. A lot.
Thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, more than
10%.
Thank you, Tim. All right. Moving on. How about we talk about our next condo craze? board certification seminar at the Hard Rock. That's November 10th at 7 o'clock. You can register for that seminar by visiting the show's website, again, at condocrazeandhoas.com. Again, we cover all kinds of topics, like what every association now needs to know in light of the Cohn case. We talk about association budgets, financial reporting, fiduciary duty of board members, arbitration, mediation, and all the laws that have been passed over the last few years, again, some of which might not even apply in your community in light of the Cohn case. Lots of coffee and cake and endless questions from our audience, and it's really a lot of fun. And like I keep saying week after week, this year Brian, our office manager at Glazer & Associates, went a little nuts and now has participants having shots at winning prizes like iPods, watches, gambling chips, giant screen, LCD TVs, Kindles, and more. And in addition to that, all the show's sponsors are there as well with all of their products and services that they can provide for your community. And again, just to remind everybody, as of July 1st, the law now provides that you can become certified 1 year before getting elected to the board, or within 3 months of actually getting elected to the board. So there's a school of thought out there that says if you're thinking about running for the board in your upcoming election, and they're certainly all coming up, why not take the course now and get certified? And you can kind of promote the fact that you're already certified when you decide to run. And again, the course provides 4 continuing education credits for all Florida Community Association managers, and many, many CAMs have attended the seminar together with their board. And they're really great because, again, like I say, they keep the attorneys that teach the course on their toes.
You know, Eric, just because, you know, the next seminar is way over a month away doesn't mean that spaces aren't filling up pretty quickly. In fact, I checked the internet Friday before we left, and I saw that over half of the spots are almost gone. So, you know, if you want to get in on the next one, which is, I believe, in 6 weeks, you better go and sign up today.
No question about it, Scott. It fills up fast. Again, if you sign up during the show, we'll say thank you on the air. Just visit the website, condocrazeandhoas.com. Sign up, and we will thank you for it. Let's do this. Let's take our first break, and we'll be back right after this, taking your calls at 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. Again, be back right after this.
Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends?
Welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. Again, I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates. We are taking your phone calls at 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. And you have an amendment?
Yes, to Tim's question. Tim called in earlier about how directors get removed from boards. There's yet another way that a director can actually get removed from the board, and that's if they get arrested for embezzlement or a felony theft. They are removed from the board pending a determination of the charges, and board members should be somewhat flattered because this was actually put into the statute 2 years ago to mirror the way that the governor actually removes corrupt politicians. So the person is removed while those charges are pending. If the charges are found, or if the politician is found, I should say, to be not guilty, they go back in office.
Like Spence Jones.
There you go. But it was actually done to mirror the way politicians are removed. So, Tim, that answers that question. So that's yet another way. You can set up your director, for instance, you know, have him get arrested.
And, nice.
We're kidding. And on that note, how about we go to Elizabeth from Boca?
Good afternoon, and thanks to the Condo Craze team for your help, information, and work both on and off the air.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you very much.
I have a question about the statements you made a few moments ago about special assessments. This is for an HOA. And if I understood you correctly, you said that the board has wide latitude in order to levy a special assessment.
That's correct.
Now, our Declaration of Protective Covenants specifically states that that special assessments can only be levied for capital improvements, building, defraying the cost in whole or part of any construction, reconstruction, et cetera, and it has to be voted on by two-thirds of the members.
Well, there's two things we're talking about here. Generally, if we're talking about just aesthetic improvements, then, of course, some of your declarations require a vote of the unit owners. But let's say something, you know, breaks in the community. There's underground pipes that burst or something, or major electrical problems. There's no way anybody can tell me that if a special assessment is required to get that fixed and repaired, that would require a vote of the community. Because it may be impossible to get a vote of the community, and the And the flip side to that would be then I guess everybody lives without electric or without water. So obviously that's not the intent of the statute. So it has to be where you have mandatory special assessments that are required in order to get the community up and running. The board absolutely has that discretion to pass it. Where the board's power might be limited, again, would be for things that are not mandatory to keep the property up and running, such as for aesthetic reasons, you know, perhaps making the pool a little bigger or wider or fancier, or the clubhouse a little bigger, wider, or fancy, you know, things of that nature. Then I would say, yes, a board's power may in fact be limited, but not when it's specifically necessary to pass the special assessments to keep the unit owners living with electric or living with you know, water, plumbing, etc. The board would absolutely have the authority to do that.
But our HOA has no control or doesn't take care of the plumbing, doesn't do the electricity. Each is it's an individual. Every house is individual, and they only maintain the common area, which is very, very limited here.
Again, each association would be different. But again, if it was just for aesthetic reasons, yes, I would agree with you that their powers might be limited. But if it's things that are necessary to keep the association up and running, there's no way that I would say that a court or that a community would have to get the vote of a majority of the unit owners to get the essentials necessary for that community up and running.
And would that apply to a board misspending money and having not enough money to do what they need to do? I mean, misspending the budget?
Well, that's a whole different story. As a matter of fact, there's a recent case, I think it was out of the 4th or the 3rd, Scott, you can tell me, about 3 weeks ago, where one of the defenses to a special assessment by a unit owner was the board just wasted a whole bunch of money and spent money that they didn't even have, and they did it incorrectly. And that's why we're not paying the special assessment. And the Court of Appeals struck that defense down and said basically there is no defense to non-payment of a special assessment, especially when even when you accuse your board of misspending money. And even where there's still money on hand and the association might not have necessarily even had to pass a special assessment.
So, wow,
again,
really?
Yeah, that's why I'm saying the courts really give a wide latitude to boards to pass special assessments. Hope that answers your question, Elizabeth, because we got to take Bob's call from Stuart.
Thanks.
Hi, you there, Bob?
Yeah, hi there.
How are you, Bob? Okay, what's going on?
Great. Well, I have a question about our condo board. I've been in the community 20 years. I recently rented it out. They, over the years, have tried to limit SUVs, and they couldn't do that, it turned out, because that was singling out a vehicle. Then they tried to create a box that vehicles had to fit in, and some vehicles did, some didn't, even if they weren't SUVs. So that didn't work. Now they have created another box and said that if you don't fit in that, you can't park here. And we're grandfathered in with our SUV, but because we rented it out, they say we won't be able to come back there, even though we were grandfathered in as an owner. So I'm calling you for information advice.
Well, again, the way I'm seeing the pattern of cases come down, not only in condominiums but in municipalities, basically it's becoming more and more difficult for associations to enforce those types of restrictions, but for if the automobile or the truck has some sort of commercial lettering on it, then yes, of course, you know, because the question is what really is a commercial vehicle? Is a commercial vehicle just a flatbed? Is a commercial vehicle something like the size of a Ford Expedition? I don't know, but because families have so many different types of vehicles today, that you're starting to see decisions say basically where there's no written letters on the vehicle itself, associations' rights to prevent vehicles from parking on the property are being taken away little by little.
And great.
And it's even happened in the city of Coral Gables.
Yeah, it's not commercial. It has no lettering on it. It's just our vehicle. It's just a big SUV.
Then I'd say you'd have a pretty good fight. As long as it's not big enough where it's, you know, impeding traffic on the road, you know, sticking out of your driveway, something like that nature.
Yeah. Great.
Then you're probably good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
You got it, Bob. Thank you very much.
877-850-8585. We'd love taking your calls.
All right. Interesting case decided 2 weeks ago out of the 5th District Court of Appeals, which hears appeals of cases that are litigated on the west coast of Florida. And it kind of has to do with how long an association has to decide whether to take action against someone for violating a provision of their governing documents, kind of like what Bob was talking about a minute ago. And in a case called Melbourne Association Club Condominium versus Elledge, a unit owner actually sued the condo association and the association's manager for failing to produce the year-end financial statements for five consecutive years.
Wow.
And in fact, that owner sought an order from the court requiring these year-end statements to be produced.
And on appeal, the Fifth said that what the owner was trying to do by demanding that the reports get prepared was actually an action for specific performance of a contract. And in Florida, an action for specific performance of a contract must be brought within 1 year. So a plaintiff's request for preparation of the financial reports for several years would be denied.
Right. Couldn't get the records, believe it or not. And the court actually set up an interesting but possibly confusing test when determining whether or not there's a one-year statute of limitations which applies for specific performance actions, or whether there's a five-year statute of limitation action for action seeking injunctive relief. And basically, the court said that where someone is required to do something under a contract, like provide a financial report, again, they're required to provide the financial report, you would sue them to force them to take an act, and therefore you're seeking actually specific performance of a contract, and that would be subject to a one-year statute of limitations, so you got to act quickly. However, where an illegal action has already been done, like paint your house in a legal color or maybe have an illegal car in your driveway, there the association would have a five-year statute of limitations to bring an enforcement action.
Now, it sounds a little confusing, and I'm guessing that our listeners shouldn't decide for themselves whether or not one-year statute or a five-year statute of limitations actually applies.
It is somewhat confusing, Karen, and again, you're right. The decision is confusing, and owners are advised, get a professional legal opinion before the one-year statute runs out.
And where can they get that?
They can call us at the office, 954-983-1112, but we're taking your calls, 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. We'll be back right after this.
Second half hour of Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. Again, I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro. From Glazer & Associates, we are taking your phone calls at 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585.
All right, crazy article on Yahoo the other day about how the failure of unit owners to pay their assessments has caused neighbor to sue neighbor and associations throughout Florida, and how boards are preventing delinquent unit owners from using the pool and are filing lawsuits. You know, that's certainly nothing new. But two things from that article did catch my attention. And the first is that some unit owners can actually only afford to send in a partial payment of what they owe. And we teach this at the seminar all the time. Suppose an owner owes, let's say, $1,200, but only sends in $500. What should the association do with that money?
You want me to tell you?
Tell us.
Well, there was this case decided down in Miami a few years ago, I guess back in 2008, and it was called Ocean 2 Condominium v. Klinger. And in that case, the owner sent in a partial payment, and the management company sent it back. And then the condo started to foreclose. Well, the trial court then refused to grant the association a final judgment of foreclosure.
Yeah, and on appeal, the Third District Court of Appeal said that the condominium association and their management company made a mistake by not accepting that partial payment, and that, in fact, they were required by law to accept that partial payment, even if there was a restrictive endorsement on the check that said paid in full, because there's actually a Florida statute that protects the association and allows them to collect everything that's owed to the association, even if the owner writes paid in full on the check. But more importantly, the court pointed out that had the association accepted the check, even though it was for less than what they actually owed, it still would have reduced the amount in controversy, it would have reduced the accrual of interest, and it would have increased the likelihood of a negotiated resolution of the balance of the dispute. And that's a good thing in stark contrast to the actual filing of a foreclosure action.
Now, Eric, I haven't read that case actually in a couple of years since it came out, but I do remember some wording in it that said, had everything been done properly, the amount would have been so nominal that only an unreasonable person would have filed a foreclosure complaint based on the amount that was in controversy.
Exactly.
And, you know, as a matter of fact, I was reading earlier this month that the 4th DCA ruled in a case called Sar v. Wellesley at Lake Clark Shores HOA that the homeowners association wouldn't be allowed to foreclose on a lien for alleged unpaid assessments because many of the owner's checks were held and not deposited properly. Mm. You know, that's causing additional interest and attorney's fees. I mean, this is just another mistake.
Right, so I guess the lesson to associations is that if you're listening, it's to take the money no matter what.
Yeah, absolutely. You take the money no matter what, regardless of whether or not someone writes on the check paid in full, regardless of whether or not it's only a partial payment or the full amount or whatever.
And here's another helpful piece of advice. Don't file a lawsuit unless you're sure you have to.
Right. And don't hold on to the money. Deposit it. You know, no two ways about it. Again, in the recent case, I think it was the law firm and the management company were holding on to checks and not depositing them and then filing suit. And the court obviously did not look too kindly upon that. But I mentioned that there were two things I actually took away from that article. And the second was that it said today 1 in 5 U.S. homeowners is subject to the will of a homeowners association whose boards oversee 24.4 million homes and that more than 80% of newly constructed homes in the U.S. are actually in association communities. You know, I find it kind of ironic that here we are on a radio show that week in and week out that has both unit owners and board members calling in and complaining about their association. And despite, you know, all this negative publicity that associations seem to attract, that's all that developers are actually building today.
Well, we know there are a lot of reasons why developers build those types of associations, but the fact of the matter is, Eric, when was the last time you even saw a developer building something that wasn't in a homeowners association or a condominium association? Because I certainly don't remember.
Yeah, it doesn't exist.
Well, obviously millions of people thought it was a good idea to move into a community association, but how come none of those people are actually taking the other position that community associations actually work and work well? Where are some of those 24.4 million residents?
Yeah, good question, Karen. You know, we can hypothecate all day long about...
What was that word again?
Whatever that means. Yeah, that's way above my pay grade, right?
Hypothesize?
Hypothesize, hypothecate. What's the word? Hypothecate.
I don't know.
I don't know. Anyway, we can talk about all day long why community association living sounds like a great idea, but you don't get that feeling when listening to this show or even attending any of the Condo Craze seminars because the complaints keep coming in. So how about we throw the issue out to our listeners? Does the concept of community association living even make sense anymore? Does it work well in your community, or was it a well-intentioned plan that's going bad because the paying customers are paying the bills for the non-payers? How about someone calling in for change and telling us what an absolute great job their board is doing and how they appreciate their board members' hard work? Or, you know, how about would you ever move into a condo or HOA again? You know, let us know what you think. Give us a call here in the studio at 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. And here's a story about a very high publicity case that actually originates in Louisiana but has gotten a lot of press around the country. Jody and Timothy Burr, they live in an HOA and are parents of a son who is currently serving in the Marines. And last month, the Homeowners Association sued the Burrs because the Burrs put up a very large sign in their front yard. I would guess it was something like 3 feet by 6 feet that shows a picture of their son in uniform and says that our son defends our freedom.
Now, as we read the story, the association's documents clearly say that no signs can be posted outside the home. But the Burrs say that they have always posted signs for the past 5 years without any problems. And so have all of her neighbors, but generally these were the typical for sale in garage signs.
Yeah, well, Mrs. Burr says, quote, "They don't know what's in a mother's heart to have a son deployed. It is very difficult for me. The best way for me to deal with it is to have an outward display of our pride. We have not received one single piece of criticism about our sign."
Well, now the association originally sent out a letter that said, as while the association appreciates the message on the sign, the rules are still the rules. Now, legally, again, depending upon how the governing docs read, if the Burrs can prove that signs have always been allowed, then the association may have a problem making the Burrs take down that sign. But again, I'd like to know what our listeners think. Should mom and dad be allowed to keep the 3-foot by 6-foot sign outside their property that tells the world how proud they are of their son because he's serving in the military? Or are the rules, and the sign has to go? You know, I'm sure lots of parents are proud over lots of things that their children do besides serving in the military. But, you know, again, do all parents get to put up big signs outside their home showing pictures of their kids? And why don't we do this? Why don't we go to our final break of the hour? Again, taking your calls on all these controversial topics. 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. We'll be back right after this.
Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends?
Welcome back to the final segment of Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. Again, I am Karen Curtis, joined by attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates, taking your phone calls at 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. You want to take Bob from Plantation?
Yes, let's do that. How are you, Bob?
Hey, how you doing?
Okay, what's up?
No, I just heard what you're talking about in terms of signage, and I think, you know, when you move into an association, one of the biggest problems, I think people don't realize that there are restrictions. Sometimes you want a neighborhood to have a certain look. Now, I think the biggest problem you have with something like you just spoke about in terms of a sign honoring a child is that, you know, while it's a wonderful thing, and I think everybody agrees to it, that if you start bending the rules, and this is why I think a lot of people hate associations, because they go after everybody for every rule violation.
Right.
It's that they don't want to set a precedent. They don't want to sit back and say, well, what if someone, for example, were to say, you know, they, God forbid, lost a child in the war.
Right.
And all of a sudden they said, my child's favorite color was plaid, so I want to paint my house plaid.
Right.
It's going to change the look of the neighborhood. Everybody, nobody is going to say anything to the homeowner.
Right.
But in reality, you know, and it's a wonderful thing to do, but it changes the character of the neighborhood. And the unfortunately, when you live in an association, you have got to look at the rules before you buy.
Absolutely. And again, you know, maybe this is a little controversial, but, you know, a neighbor might feel that, hey, we absolutely couldn't appreciate more that your child is actually serving overseas in the military and protecting our country. However, that being said, I don't know if I want to look out my front door or look out my window and see a picture of your child, you know, staring back at me for the next couple of years while your child is actually serving in the military.
I guess the question is, what if everybody did it?
Right, exactly. Suppose, you know, there was a bunch of parents on the block that has kids in the military. Should everybody get to put their kid's picture out there?
What happened to tying yellow ribbons around trees?
Right, that's another way of doing it. But
doesn't it get it to...
You know, again,
I would think.
Sure, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was saying the other thing which people have to realize is that, yes, it's a wonderful thing, but what happens when you get the errant person who posts a sign, those horrible Americans killing wonderful Iraqis? You have to understand that if it's freedom of speech and everybody's doing it, then it's going to create issues.
Right.
And that's why they don't have it.
Well, I appreciate the call, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
All right, thank you very much.
A slippery slope argument.
Right, that's the thing. You know, if a board is going to let one set of homeowners, you know, put that picture of their child out there, then they're opening the door for, you know, potentially all kinds of different signs and stuff that would be able to go out, and that's you know, not something that boards should perhaps go down that route. But if that sign case of a picture of the son being in the military isn't controversial enough, how about another case that's out of Jacksonville now, where an owner in an HOA simply put out a sign in front of our house that said one word, Jesus. And of course, the HOA sent her a letter asking her to take it down.
And of course, the unit owner says, by moving into the community, I did not give away my freedom of speech, religion, or my rights as an American citizen. In fact, one of her neighbors has a religious statue in her yard, and that neighbor was quoted as saying, "I think it's ridiculous. It shows who we are, our faith."
Well, despite being threatened with a $100 per day fine, that homeowner says she plans to leave it exactly where it is, but believe it or not, you can get this. The ACLU says that even though it can't comment on this specific case, it's entirely possible that the HOA has the authority to take it down, but, you know, leave it to the ACLU to fight for the rights of the Nazi Party to march through our American citizens, march against our American cities while on the same hand fighting for the association's right to make an owner tear down a Jesus sign. You know, I'm kind of not surprised. But by the way,
apples and apples.
I know Scott couldn't let that go. Yeah, big ACLU fan to my left, you know, not me. But by the way, we like to cover this topic a bit more in detail as we get closer to the year-end holidays. But believe it or not, there's a specific condo statute that allows owners to display religious symbols. But there's no such statute for HOAs, for some reason, the Florida legislature thinks that condo owners have more freedom of religion, perhaps, than owners in an HOA. And a couple of weeks ago, there was actually an interesting blog circulating around the internet about whether or not you would want Casey Anthony living in your HOA or your condominium, and if you didn't, if there was a legal way to keep her out. Well, in Windermere, Florida, a local HOA is trying to pass a proposal that would keep sex offenders out of their entire gated community.
And the president of the community is quoted as saying that while the association doesn't currently have a problem with any sex offenders, they want to be proactive. But the article also says that legal experts disagree on whether or not the rule would stand up in court.
Well, let me tell you something. A couple of years back, the Supreme Court of Florida ruled in a case called Woodside versus Jaron that if you get the people in the community to amend their governing documents, almost anything that those amendments seeks to do is going to be allowed unless someone's constitutional rights are being violated. Now, I ask you this. Since when does a sex offender have a constitutional right to live in a specific community? At least to me, they don't. Just like children don't have a constitutional right to live in a 55 and over community, communities can restrict people as long as they are not restricting people that are members of a protected class, like minorities, women. And the last time I checked, sex offenders are not members of a protected class. And just to take this one step further, this morning on a LinkedIn discussion, someone had raised a question as to whether or not a condominium association would be able to ban smokers from actually smoking in their units.
Oh.
And I can tell you, I have the same opinion when it comes to that. If you look closely at that Woodside case, Woodside versus Jaron, again, which was decided by the Florida Supreme Court, again, they said, you get the unit owners in the community to agree to amend your documents. We know how hard it is to get 75%. You
but
get them to agree, as long as it's not unconstitutional what they're doing, we're basically going to uphold it every single time.
Yeah, what I want to know is, when was the last time you checked out the definitions of what protected classes were, about 20 years ago?
I know it ain't smokers. You can't tell me that smokers aren't protected.
So the bottom line is, do you think that if a community properly amended their documents, they would have the right to exclude sex offenders from moving in, smokers from smoking in their condos?
No two ways about it. I'd love to know what our listeners think in this regard. Should you be able to exclude sex offenders from your community? You know, give us a call, 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. Let's say this, though. Some associations already have the ability to screen and reject proposed owners and tenants, and I think that if those provisions already exist, one of the criteria that can be used is certainly whether or not a person is a sex offender and has a record in that regard. But the board should definitely have in place a system of guidelines that have been adopted when deciding to accept or reject someone so that everyone basically gets treated equally.
Like if they're a felon?
Yeah, exactly. Just have, you know, limitations across the board. Treat everybody fairly and equally. But in those communities that don't have the right to screen and reject, they can certainly amend their documents to include a specific provision, and in my opinion, it would definitely be upheld. But you know, there's always confusion on this topic, by the way. We get all kinds of letters and emails sent to us all the time from people questioning whether or not their board or complaining, I should say, that they just got denied the right to move into a community, or their tenant just got denied the right to move into a community, and they want to know, you know, how is that possible? And the first thing that I tell them to do is take a look at their governing documents, because for some reason or another, a lot of boards think that they have the ability to reject people from moving in, or even as an owner or as a tenant, and that right simply doesn't exist. It doesn't exist in the documents, and if it doesn't exist in the documents, the board can't simply make a rule that all of a sudden gives them the right to screen and reject. On that note, how about we take Carolyn, who's calling in all the way from the Florida Keys.
Yay.
How are you, Carolyn?
Hello.
How are you?
Okay, I have a question on the year rule you said about a board going after a one. I live in a condominium where we own our land. So we all own our land. And the condominium, we've been going after them for the last 6 years of looking into the books and records, and they just don't produce it. So now, does that year still apply?
Oh, that's interesting. So you want to have, access to records, and you make a request
we
for
access? We wanted access to records to prove fraud and other things, and they can't find the records, or they stall over the year, or
okay.
until they lose them.
What I would do, I guess the smart thing to do is basically start from scratch at this point. Did you send them a written letter saying that you want access to records?
We've sent them certified.
Okay, and how long ago did you do that?
We've been doing it since 2005.
Wow.
Okay, well, when's the last time you did it? Let's put it that way.
We did it a year ago, trying to get a monthly statement.
Okay, now there's an argument under that case. Again, very similar. You're asking them to produce records. That would be like asking them to specifically perform a contract, and therefore, based on your prior letters, you might only have a one-year statute of limitations that might have been blown by now. But what I would do is I'd write a new letter, and by writing a new letter to the association, that would restart the clock. Write the letter, ask them for...
Okay.
Yeah, write the letter. Definitely, absolutely do what you just did. Send it by certified mail, return receipt requested. Ask them for access to, make sure that you use those words, access to the following records. And if they don't provide access to those records within 5 days, you would have a right to bring a cause of action against them and an arbitration. And within 10 days, if they don't provide the access to the records, it's deemed willful. And you would have a right to sue your association for $50 a day for up to 10 days. That's $500 in damages, plus get all your attorney's fees and costs back. But that's the way you would do it. I'd restart the clock. Send that letter again.
Okay.
So where are you in
Thank
the Keys?
You.
Out of curiosity, where are you in the Keys?
Marathon.
So instead of getting drunk in the Keys and just hanging out, taking it easy, you're listening to Condo Craze and HOAs. I am so proud.
Absolutely.
That's great.
Nice.
How's our signal coming over there?
Pretty good.
All right. We stretch all the way from the Keys.
I have you on the computer. I can't get you on the radio.
Oh, on the computer. Okay.
Okay.
There we go.
That's
all right. That's great.
Awesome.
So someone making the attempt to tune in by a computer. We are flattered. Thank you, Carolyn.
Thank you.
All right. Well, looks like that concludes yet another week on the show. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in yet again, joining us here on Condo Craze and HOAs. Have a great week, and we look forward to talking to you again next week.